Welcome to Yip Podcast. This is Mary.
And this is Tammy.
And here with us in the studio today is our good friend Jody.
Yip!
We'll be talking to Jody a little bit later on about ethnic Indian accessories, especially things that are useful and applicable to belly dance. Tribe topics this week. Anything going on in your world of tribe, Tammy?
Well, the tribe I wanted to discuss this week was the hair and makeup tribe, because they have all these pictures, not just of dancers and their makeup, but makeup photos out of magazines, out of different kinds of shows that you would see, like circus style, burlesque style, just a variety. And so you can get all these ideas and what people have built on it. I actually really like their Halloween pictures, because I think that's when people seem to get most creative. This week, one of the topics that they brought up, and they've brought up previously, is about no shampooing. They brought it up roughly a year ago, and I became interested in it because I didn't like the way my hair was. So I decided to try this poo-free thing. The idea is to get away from using shampoo every day, which is what I've been doing for years and years and years. The method I chose to do is called baking soda, apple cider vinegar. Baking soda you use kind of like a shampoo. You just mix it with a little bit of water and kind of scrub it into your hair before you go into the shower. And you let it set in your hair and you really scrub it in there for about a minute. And then I go into the shower, I rinse it all out. And I already have a bottle of, I think it's like 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar mixed with water in just basically a water bottle. And that just stays in my shower. So after you do the baking soda, you rinse it out with the apple cider vinegar. And you can use the rinse, actually, it's really good for your hair, several times a week. The baking soda, you want to try and kind of ease yourself off of that too, because it can be very drying for your hair. The first couple weeks you do it, your hair is nasty greasy. So I chose to do it when I had a week vacation, when I was just working around the house. Now, a year later, I really, really like my hair. I think it's got more body. My hair was very stringy before. The baking soda is more to basically just cleanse your scalp. It's just to deodorize and to really kind of give a deep clean. I was doing it because my hair was so greasy every other day. Then I went to every third day, every fourth day, and now I can do a week time. I probably can go longer if I don't have practice.
But the oils in your hair, that's what cleans your hair.
Exactly.
So once you get past that greasiness, you shouldn't ever have to shampoo again.
Correct. That's shampoo weird. Is actually what is making your hair greasy, because what shampoo is doing is it's stripping your hair of all its natural oils. And so to make up for the stripping of the oils, your body is like now making even more oils. So what some girls were saying is that now that they've done the no poo, that actually their skin is cleared up too, because their body isn't making as much oil.
Wow.
So it's...
Well, we're going to be out of school soon, so maybe I'll try it first couple weeks of summer.
So check it out.
Well, that's cool. I did go to the Tribal Fusion Music Tribe, and there is a post on there from Ashara, who's a tribal dancer from Washington, D.C., and she posted it was a couple of weeks ago that Maduro has a new CD that's being released. Yeah, I love Maduro, and he's got somebody else in the CD, somebody called Note Crusher. I don't know who Note Crusher is, but I'm assuming that if Maduro is doing a CD with Note Crusher, that he or she is probably somebody cool. According to what Ashara wrote, it started out as a remix project, but I guess they really started vibing off of each other, and it turned into this big project. And so there's 14 songs in the CD, and all of them are completely original new compositions. So it sounds very cool. I'm going to have to look into it. And I love Ashara. Tammy, we met her at TribalCon.
Yeah, she's...
in February.
She's one of those people, like, I admire from afar, and then I'm too nervous to actually go up and say anything. And she just, like, geeks out on stuff. It's awesome.
She's and, such a geek.
She, but in a good way. She's really methodical about the way she dances and, and exactly like where her movements are. And she says a lot of it comes from her drawing a line and saying, this is where I want my body to move. Really funky ways of thinking. But she has a blog called Belly Dance Paladin. It's bdpaladin.com.
Oh, I love the word paladin.
Isn't that like holy warrior or something. I read a book called The Paladin, and I think some kind of warrior.
So on her blog recently, her most recent post was about vintage fusion trends and is it tribal style. She really doesn't hold back on her thoughts, which I love, because some people who are kind of out in the spotlight might try and
want to play nice with everybody.
Exactly. And not that she's rude or anything like that, but she definitely says what she thinks. And she goes on to talk about what the new trend is and when it kind of crosses the line between actually being belly dance and just being a fusion piece or being an artistic piece. You know, talks about things like some of the props that are being used, how appropriate is it to have a bottle of liquor while you're dancing, whether it's a prop or she's actually seeing dancers who are really drinking while they're dancing, and how her take on it is. So I just suggest, it's fairly long, so I'm not going to talk about the whole blog entry, but I suggest going to bdpaladin.com and checking it out.
Our first artist is a group called the Gotan Project, and they're out of France, Paris specifically. Their music is very much about the tango. Probably a lot of people know one of their songs called Santa Maria, which was featured in two movies in the past couple of years, Shall We Dance and also Take the Lead. So there's three songs you're going to hear. The first one is Santa Maria, just so you can hear the song that probably most people would identify with Gotan Project. And then the two after that, the second one is Chunga's Revenge, and the third one was Amor Porteño. And that was my favorite one, the third one. It sounds sort of introspective and kind of like, it's kind of what I picture would play like at 4 or 5 in the morning on some kind of seedy bar when mostly no one's there and you're really sleepy and a little bit inebriated and you feel like dancing. That's what I think of.
Get a cantina. Buenos Aires.
Ay, milonga de amor. Ay,
una inquietante mirada de amor porteño, cálida y cruel, no puedo creer que pasó el misterio sensual de tu risa canyengue se apagó.
All right, well, those are my top choices from the Gotan Project. They've got several CDs out right now. One of the most popular is La Revancha del Tango, which came out in 2001. But they have some more recent CDs out there. So check them out. And coming up next.
Now we have our guest. And Jody's from Beachcombers.
What's Beachcombers?
Beachcombers Bazaar. We just opened a store in College Park, but we've been an online business for the past 5 years, and we sell women's ethnic accessories from India.
Very cool. Yep, College Park is right there, north of downtown Orlando. So if you're in the area, you should stop by. Very nice store.
Why, thank you, Mary.
I buy things there all the time.
I'll pay you later.
As you well know. I'll take my payment in bindis.
Or if you can't make it down there, you can go to
www.shop.beachcombers.com.
So Jody, I wanted to start off by asking if you personally have any dance experience.
Well, yes. I danced tribal fusion with Lacey. I started dancing, I started belly dancing three years ago, 3.5 years ago, actually, with Suspira at Orlando Belly Dance Cabaret, which was great fun. Did that for just over a year, and then I discovered tribal and found where I really belonged. And I've been doing that ever since.
In your experience in dancing and watching performances, what specific items do you see dancers that you feel are really true ethnic pieces that we tend to use in our costuming?
Well, I find as far as ethnic pieces, I find those mostly in tribal dance. Cabaret is not all the same, but in a lot of ways, you know what to expect. You see a coin belt, you see either a skirt or, you know, the pants, but it's very predictable. But with tribal, there's so many different costuming options that it really opens things up. And I see people borrowing from all kinds of cultures. And I love all the Kuchi jewelry, all the Afghani gypsy jewelry. And you see some very authentic pieces in those. You see people borrowing from Egyptian and cabaret costumes.
For cabaret, like when I came out of cabaret, usually everything's very shiny. And then when I started doing tribal, I thought it was funny that suddenly, you know, going from buying Indian wedding sets and things like that to where we were now like, oh, I just wish this silver bracelet looked more tarnished, you know?
Yay for peroxide.
You know, yeah. You find yourself searching online for ways to tarnish silver, which is very funny. Let's pull ourselves back together. What were we talking about?
So I'd like to kind of pull us back into talking about ethnic pieces that we possibly could wear, specifically bindis. So I'd like, Jody, if you could kind of tell us the significance behind bindis culturally, and then we can discuss how we use them in dance.
Great topic. Love bindis. Big fan. Been wearing them for ages. Bindis, a lot of people think of them only as the traditional red dot, which symbolizes marriage in many parts of India. But remember, India is huge. It's got the second biggest population in the entire world. There are so many different cultures within the country. I mean, just think of America and how many different cultures there are here compared to Florida, New York, California, Idaho. So many different cultures. In India, it's even more so, and so many places are very isolated that many meanings have developed that are purely for one small village. So if we're focusing on India alone, you have the traditional, which the red dot is typically sindoor powder, not a sticker bindi, which most of us are familiar with. That's the same powder that you'll sometimes see Indian women put in the part of their hair. Mm-hmm. And it makes it look red. Again, symbol of marriage. Single women will often wear a black dot as opposed to a red dot. Sometimes a little smaller. Again, usually some sort of powder rather than a sticker bindi. Other bindi meanings. There are certain religions that have a horizontal line. Some have a vertical line that are actually typically worn by men and just a symbol of your religion so that people know what you are worshiping and what faith you happen to belong to. Bindi is often your sixth chakra focus. So if anybody is into yoga, you know, you know your sixth chakra. It's right up here in our forehead. And bindi is used as a way to focus that. It helps you relate to people, it helps them relate better to you, and it helps you just focus your chakra. Probably the most popular way to wear bindi is for that. But most people wear purely for fashion. When you see Bollywood movies and whatnot, with the big fancy bindi with all the glitter and all the glam and all the crystals, that's worn for fashion. It's not worn for any other reason. It's just for fun. I think some people, especially people who don't understand bindi and who haven't been exposed to it, assume that it's something very deep and you know, very mysterious, but it's not. You know, it's a piece of body jewelry, and you can choose to wear it, you know, however you'd like. You don't have to wear it on your forehead. You can wear bindi at the corner of your eyes. You can wear it as fake piercings. You can wear it as a floating necklace. You can wear it around your belly button, lower back, around your ankles. My mom puts the long skinny bindi on the back of her high heel shoes, on the back of her stilettos.
That sounds cute.
Super cute. So bindi is a very versatile thing. So you shouldn't get stuck in a rut thinking bindi is only one thing and only one meaning.
As a dancer, I like the sparkly bindis, and I happen to over the years get bigger and bigger and bigger with my bindis. I'm also finding with tribal dancers that we're starting to use random items as binties and just putting sticker backs on them and
like really cool buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can find some cool buttons.
As a performer, should we be concerned, again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, knowing your audience, are there certain times where maybe a bindi isn't appropriate because of the fact that in certain areas of India, it is used as a religious reference or to signify certain things, while the main culture there is using it as fashion? I have a friend who goes to, a local Indian church, and I was asking her about it, and she said she knows that a lot of people do wear them for fashion, but in her church, they specifically wear them for religious purposes. So to her, it's not offensive, but it's not the most respectful piece of jewelry you could wear if we were like performing at a church. I don't, that's really random, like we would be performing at this person's church.
That's a great example. In general, not that I am easily offended by any stretch of the imagination, but if I were the type of person who was easily offended, it would offend me if somebody had an issue with me wearing a bindi. Because why would you ever think that you could claim possession of this article of whether it's fashion statement, personal style? What it means to me has nothing to do with what it means to you. So I would find an issue with that. That being said, if I was performing at a church amongst people who had a specific meaning for it, I wouldn't want to compete with their meaning. I would want to use my bindi however I was feeling it, whether it was my sixth chakra focus or whether because I thought it was cute to wear a floaty necklace that day in a bindi.
As far as people finding bindi offensive, and I've heard arguments that people do find bindi offensive, especially, grand statements about, all Indians find, bindi wearing offensive. I've heard statements that people who are from India find non-Indians wearing bindi offensive, which is, again, clumping all Indians into a very large group. But I think it also boils down to, not to get a chip on our shoulder here, this is America. We are a melting pot of so many different cultures. And, how many times have a small subgroup tried to turn a small thing into a huge, huge issue? There are religious groups in this country that think women should only wear skirts. Should I always wear skirts because somebody might see me walk down the road and be offended that I'm trying to be a man? There are so many different belief systems, and you're not going to make everybody happy. And I think for this particular instance, and in some other things, we veer into the sort of road of political correctness where it's like, oh, it's okay if you want to ignore the crazy religious crackpots who live out on a farm and have 17 wives, but you don't want to trample on somebody else's culture because we're a friend to the world and you don't want to make anyone feel like we don't care about their culture. And it's like, well, being a crackpot farmer in the middle of the nowhere having 17 wives, that's culture. We just happen to label them as crackpots. If that were the standard culture for everybody in India, would we suddenly have a better tolerance for that lifestyle because we don't want to trample on their culture?
I do understand what you're saying.
I think this particular issue veers a lot into political correctness and just trying to make sure that we value everybody's ethnicity and everybody's backgrounds and everybody's personal religious beliefs, but you can't make everybody happy.
You can never make everybody happy. And I've been around, my other half, Asad, is Pakistani. I've been around Pakistani and Indians for 10 years. And not once in all of that time have I had somebody genuinely offended. I've only heard so-and-so said and so-and-so said from these. And in fact, the first time I ever heard it was about a year ago that someone was offended because somebody else was wearing bindi. Just because a small group of people feel that way, well, I'm sorry, I'm not out to offend anybody. But honestly, do we really want to live our lives trying to not offend anybody?
Well, my theory is people who are going to be offended by us wearing bindis are probably offended that we're dancing.
Exactly.
And will probably not patronize our shows. So if you're not paying me any money, why should I care about your opinion?
If you have an issue with my bindi, you probably have...
Now you know how shallow I am.
Well, you're right, though. If somebody has an issue with, me wearing a bindi, then they definitely have an issue with me doing a shimmy across the stage.
All righty. So now that we're off the hot bindi topic.
Hot topic.
That horse has been beaten to death. Yeah. Let's go find another crazy controversial thing. Let's just go crazy.
Oh, let's talk henna.
Let's talk henna indeed. All right.
So,
I love henna. Do you love henna?
Love henna. Henna is one of my very favorite ways to decorate for dance. It's, well, one of my favorite ways to decorate in general.
Just in case there's somebody out there who's not sure what it is, because I, you know, once upon a time, I did not really know what henna was, or I'd seen it, but I didn't know that's what it was called. So really quickly, give us a breakdown. What is henna? Paint us a picture.
Henna is a temporary tattoo, and almost everybody has seen it. It's typically an orange or a brown color, and it's temporary. It lasts 1 to 3 weeks and then is gone. It is made from a plant. The plant leaves are dried, ground into a powder, turned into a paste. The paste is used to decorate the skin. The paste is peeled off the skin, which then leaves your henna stain. And that's what we know as henna. It is also called Mindy or Mandy, henna art, henna occasionally.
Where does Mandy come from?
Mispronunciation of Mindy. Mindy typically refers to henna as the art form of henna, because henna is also used to dye your hair. It's used for many different things. Henna's original use was actually medicinal. Henna was originally used as an air conditioning for the desert. It was used to bring your body temperature down years and years ago, thousands of years ago. They would cover their hands and the soles of their feet in henna, and they found that as long as the color was on their skin, their body temperature was slightly lower.
Oh, that's interesting.
That actually led to just doing a big dot instead of having the entire hand covered, which led to dots around the dots and whatnot, and eventually into the decorative form of henna that we see today.
Okay, this may be a stupid question. I've seen you do henna a lot, and like usually the paste looks greenish or brownish, but then you'll hear references to people who have like henna colored hair, and it often means reddish.
When you talk about the color of henna, you were typically talking about the stain it leaves, whether that's on the skin or the hair. So most people, when they think of the color of henna, they think of a reddish brown, or maybe with a hint of burgundy. Everybody has their own idea of what color henna should be. Henna, however, is never, ever, ever, ever black.
Thank you. I wanted to make sure that you brought that out.
Now, is it never black, or is it never supposed to be? Explain that comment. It sounds very forbidding when you say that.
Oftentimes people will want henna, and what they're looking for is a black tattoo or a real looking black tattoo. Henna will not leave a black stain. You can get very close to black on the palms of your hands with a lot of work, but in general, henna is going to be a brownish, reddish stain. It will never be black. If anybody is putting henna on, they claim it will leave a black stain. That's not necessarily henna. It may not have any henna at all in it, in fact, or it may be henna mixed with chemicals, specifically PPD found in black hair dye, but in much higher doses than hair dye. PPD is legal in the U.S. in hair dye. It's illegal in most of the European countries, but it's legal here, and I believe it's 6% as a maximum for your hair dye. When it's used with henna as a body stain, it's typically between 30 and 70%. Wow. And it's a severe allergen. It can be very dangerous. And the big point of it, you don't necessarily get a reaction right away, but you may be sensitized to it. You may not get a reaction after encountering black henna for years and years and years. You may go to dye your hair one day, 4 years after you had a slight rash over your black henna tattoo that you got in Mexico, and then you end up in the hospital because you can't breathe. So it's a very real thing. Not everybody will be sensitized to it, and you won't necessarily be sensitized the first time. It may not be until the 20th time you've come in contact with it. But the point is, the danger is always there, and it's very real, so just stay away.
And I suggest to people to, if you're internet savvy, which if you're listening to us, you probably are, to look up black henna and the dangers of black henna. I mean, I've seen some really nasty pictures of people have used it, and it's literally just scarred their skin.
If you go to my henna help site, which is shophenna.com, there's a section on henna safety, and it covers black henna. It covers any kind of danger possibly associated with henna or with something that might be billed as henna.
Is henna edible?
Technically, yes. It wouldn't taste very good, though. But henna is used, henna is an antifungal. It is used to clean wounds. Well, it's used all over the world for all kinds of things. Umbilical cords, especially in third world countries, are often sealed off with henna.
That's what I'm doing next
time. Yay!
The next time you get knocked up, you're going to seal it off with henna. I see some flaws in your plan, but I'm far be it from me to suggest any of them. Yeah, just have Jody attend the birth, and I think you'll be in good shape.
Sorry, way off topic yet again. With henna, could you go through and explain a couple of designs that have significance or meaning? I know, you know, lotus flowers have different meanings, and there are a lot of designs in henna.
Oh gosh, there are so many different meanings with designs that it's completely unlimited. So symbols of henna. In general, there aren't symbols that are specifically for henna. Henna adapts symbols from any culture you want.
Well, it sounds like a lot of art forms.
Yes. Yeah. So like Japanese characters are often used in henna traditionally for Indian henna.
When you said Japanese characters, I'm thinking like anime. And I'm like...
And you this just, is like, why we drift.
I was like, I have never seen a henna design of some, you know... solemn girl with huge eyes and ponytails.
But you could.
Sorry.
Henna's
Japanese
just basically a
written
stain
characters.
On...
So the written
Japanese the written characters. Thank you for that. Let's repeat, shall we?
Just wanted to clear that up in case anyone's confused. I wasn't confused. I just thought some of you might be. Yeah. Okay. Japanese characters. So yeah, I can see that. A lot of, I've had some friends who, you know, got like Chinese characters or symbols, which I'm also always really paranoid about. I don't have any tattoos. I love tattoos, but
yeah,
I
how do you know they actually tattooed what you said
see,
you wanted?
That's what I'm scared about. If I was ever going to get something that was in Chinese or a language that there's no way I could translate online, I would make sure I had a friend who'd been a friend for a while who I trusted.
Yes.
Who could read that, come to the tattoo parlor and make sure that it was valid. Because you might think it says peace and joy, and it might say, like, take out the trash. You don't know what it's saying. So that's just my own personal, private little. Americans are so shallow. If you have a fun accent, we'll be like, oh, you sound so much smarter, guy who's talking with a British accent. And instead of tattooing love and happiness in, you know, a script font on your lower back, you have it in Chinese and it looks so cool. But with our shallowness, we have to have some caution. Henna is a nice option in case you're not sure what it means.
It goes away.
I know. Just have to wear a shirt over your inappropriate Chinese for a couple days and you're good. You're good to go.
And I've had friends and we've known people who have henna themselves like a temporary tattoo to see if they want the real thing.
Very popular.
Drifting.
Well, pretty much. I mean.
Well, actually, back to the symbolism of mm-hmm. henna. We talked about some of its uses. It's used during weddings. It's used for any big event in people's lives in general, many holidays, that kind of thing. Traditional Indian symbols, peacocks. You see peacocks so often. Paisleys. You often see paisleys in henna.
Yeah.
Paisleys are often used to symbolize a seed, which is growth, you know, and which is a very common theme, especially in the Hindu religion, is growth and regrowth and rebirth. So you'll often see that. You'll see sprouts, which are just little buds or, you know, coming off of a vine. Mm-hmm. And again, that same thing, you see wavy lines symbolizes water, which symbolizes wealth. In the desert, of course, water is a symbol of wealth because there isn't much of it. Let's see, what other good symbols do we have to let you know? You'll see all kinds of the chakra symbols are often used. You'll see the Om, very popular, of course, with henna. You will see the different gods of the Hindu religion often. You'll see elephants in general. Let's talk different styles of henna. You will often, the most popular is probably traditional Indian henna. This is what you think of when you think of wedding henna. Very dainty, lots and lots of little lines, lots of dots, flowers, very little skin showing, very little negative space, just very intricate and delicate. Then you will see more of the Egyptian henna, which tends to be big, bold flowers, plenty of negative space, bold lines connecting the flowers, lots of negative space in between the flowers, so they're not necessarily connected. Although they can be very flowing, very viney, with, you know, leaves in between and whatnot. And then, of course, traditional Moroccan henna, which is very geometric. So when you see the henna, especially henna that you will find a very solid wristband, very straight lines, triangles, squares, and then lines within those lines to decorate. That's traditional Moroccan henna.
Okay. So looks more mosaic, maybe?
Yeah, you could say that. Actually, mosaic is a pretty good way to describe it, only not as hodgepodge. Almost mathematical, very precise, okay. Often very symmetrical. In fact, with Moroccan henna, with Indian henna, typically you don't have the same design on each hand. But with Moroccan henna, you often have an identical design on each hand.
Wow, for the perfectionist in all of us.
Mary, you ought to really like that style.
See, I like the flowiness of the sort of popular style of henna, though. The stuff you see a lot.
Yeah, and you'll also find, especially now, so many people are doing henna. More and more different cultures are discovering it. You know, it's been used all over the world for years, but like with everything here in America, we really tend to take something, just like with belly dance, and make it our own and turn it into something that we can appreciate and explore and grow in our own way. And we're like that with henna. So you'll find just completely different things here.
Well, and I know you do, personally, you do a lot of different colored hennas. And you sell those as well. So is that something more Americanized, or is that something they do in India?
No, it's actually fairly common. However, colored henna, let me preface that with what it is. It's very different from regular henna. The color lasts 1 to 3 days tops. It uses henna as a carrier. It uses fruit and vegetables for the color. So it's more akin to getting a blueberry stain on your fingers, and that stays for a few days, rather than actually how henna stains the skin. Henna is a permanent stain. It bonds with your skin cells, and it does not fade away. Your skin cells exfoliate off. So that's how the henna goes away. With the colored henna, which is more of a body color that contains henna, and that just is a very surface stain. It doesn't go deep. It's not something that's quite the same, although it's used to accent henna often, and sometimes it's used just on its own. But again, you've got a very short time of the color.
I'm doing an outdoor festival one day, and I want to have, like, sparkly blue design on
it. Now, when you start getting into that kind of thing, you're talking gilding paste. When you get the sparkle, gilding paste is one of my favorite things. Oh my gosh. very expensive to buy, but wonderful to make and very inexpensive to make. And what it is, it's a hair gel. Very hard hold, I want a mohawk that will not fade in the rain kind of hair gel.
It's like a sad hawk.
Yes. Very hard hold hair gel. And then it's mixed with mineral pigments. And I love Eyegasms. Susan's mineral pigments are fabulous because they're so pure. She gives you so much. And hers are more sparkly than most, which makes great gilding paste. So mineral pigments mixed with the hair gel, and that's it. And you experiment with a bunch of different hair gels until you find the one that you like. And you just mix them up and you use them just like henna. So you can put them in a cone. You can put the gilding paste in an applicator bottle, whatever works for you. And then you apply it in the same basic ways as henna. You can use it with henna, in conjunction with henna, or you can use it alone. But lots of fun, temporary. It will last one day, sometimes 2 or 3 days if you're really, really careful. But you can peel it off at any time.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. We call it razzle dazzle.
Now I want to go try that.
So, Anna, I have to give Anna credit for the term, though. Anna, the henna studio. She's a great henna artist because her name rhymes with henna. Isn't that cool? But she's the one she's an expert at gilding paste. She started doing all these experiments, and she uses nail gems, and she's got me sold on doing these funky, cool, striped nail polishes mixed in with it. All kinds of cool fun stuff. So another way where we take something ethnic that works with multiple cultures and really Americanize it, make it our own.
Very cool. I just wanted to thank Jody for stopping in and sharing all of her knowledge with us.
It was very interesting.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure. I had a great time.
And so next we're going to, I believe, Mary, you have another artist to introduce us to.
I do. So our first artist was the Gotan Project, and we're actually going to have a little segue into our second artist. It's not really an artist. It's a CDs, compilation CDs. They're called the Verve Remixed Compilations. The concept behind these compilations is that they take classic great songs that are just like staples, and they get these really cool MCs to remix them. So you have these fantastic old melodies that are just these amazing melodies and with these amazing voices, but you get these really fun beats and this really fun background. It's really, really cool. So the first song is Whatever Lola Wants. It's Sarah Vaughn's recording adapted by the Gotan Project. The second one is the fabulous Sarah Vaughn singing Summertime, remixed by UFO. And the third one is Black is the Color of My True Love's Hair, sung by Nina Simone and remixed by Jaffa. I think I was drawn to the Sarah Vaughn ones, especially because she's one of my very favorite vocal jazz singers. I'm not a big jazz fan. I guess I like Louis Armstrong, but I don't like sort of dribbly jazz where it sounds like everybody's improvising for 10 minutes and you're trapped listening to these people and you can't find a recognizable melody. That's sort of the first jazz I was exposed to. And so I really was like, I hate jazz. And then I realized not everybody does that. I need jazz with more structure, I think is what I need. But I also don't like scatting. Something about scatting puts my teeth on edge. And Sarah Vaughn very rarely scatted. So I think that's, other than how beautifully rich her voice is. You're going to hear three tracks, and they're all applicable to belly dancing one way or the other, depending on your mood. I mean, it would definitely be a fusion piece, but I hope you like them. Here we go.
Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. And little man, little Lola wants you. Make up your mind.
That was three songs from the Verve Remix compilations. I think two of them were from Verve Remix 2, and one of them was from the first one. They have three out right now. They're very, very fun. Not all of them would work for belly dance, in my humble opinion, but several of them are very, very cool and add that certain something special.
Special.
Special. This week on Shimmy Cove, the part of Nadine will be read by Laura. When purity of movement is threatened by the tidal wave of vanity, where the sequined veil of mystery meets the coochied hips of deceit, where the passion of the dance is consumed by the riptide of neurosis, you will find Shimmy Cove.
I'm live at the second Thursday town council meeting. This month, the halls outside the meeting room are brimming with singers, dancers, and even magicians. It's heading in towards summer, and you know what that means. Auditions for the Shimmy Cove Community Summer Festival Jamboree Evening Show. As the evening has passed on, the town council has begun seeing the auditionees in groups in an effort to speed things along. And who's in there now? None other than the famously catty belly dance rivals, Veronique of the Cabaret Nation and Absinthe from Malady Dance. A third woman was called in at the same time, Nadine from the Shimmy Spot, a relatively new belly dance studio in Shimmy Cove. Oh, to be a fly on the wall.
Who do we have coming in next, Susan?
It looks like the belly dance contingent. What I wouldn't give for just 1 year without coin, bras, and chiffon.
Now, Susan, they pay their taxes like everyone else. I personally think of myself as a patron of the arts. I appreciate all kinds of artistic expression and interpretation.
I'm sure you do.
In any case, the sooner we audition him, the sooner we'll get home. So why don't you just...
Jack, why aren't we being seen individually? I don't want the impact of my presentation muddied by this creature.
Excuse me? This coming from a woman who dressed her troupe in seashell bras and kelp skirts for a whacked-out hula routine at the fall festival?
Obviously, you know nothing about creative expression. It was a performance piece. At least my girls weren't dancing in belts decorated with ice picks.
Now, ladies, can't we all just... Nadine? Is that you back there?
Hello, Jack. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has. I meant to swing by to welcome you back into town, but...
It's all right. I'm doing fine now.
Yes, well, you look great.
I'm going to throw up.
For once, we're in agreement.
My presentation, Jack? I do have other places to be.
I'm also due back at my studio, so if we could hurry this little scene along, where are you going?
Jack, would you please focus? I'm sure Nadine doesn't need her hand held through this audition, and certainly not literally. Come back and sit down already. Jack?
Nadine, I can't believe it's really you.
Hello, Jack?
Jack, I missed you so much.
This is ridiculous. Susan, can't you do something?
Nadine.
Jack.
So who will perform at the festival? Are flames rekindling for Jack and Nadine? Will Veronique and Absinthe team up to strangle the ex-lovers right there at the town council meeting? Tune in next week for an exciting new chapter of Shimmy Cove.
I just wanted to talk briefly about what's coming up in the Orlando area and elsewhere. Mary and I were both talking earlier before the podcast about the Fringe Festival that is still going on. If you're out there, contact me, email me at email@yippodcast.com and let me know when you'll be out there, what shows you'll be seeing, and maybe we can hook up and have a drink at the beer tent.
Anik's used to drink at the beer tent. Tammy, I see right through you.
Oh, I'm totally... Well, and I'm scared they closed the beer tent on Sunday because it was raining so much. But I think they've now moved it inside during the week, so I think they're going to kind of... If it rains out, then that's what they're going to do. Because I was very upset. I had to show Dan a picture. I was like, look, it said beer tent closed. Anyway. So go to orlandofringe.org. Don't go to .com. It takes you to some travel site.
Yeah, I tried that. It didn't get very far. For a travel site, it didn't help me get where I was trying to go.
So, stupid. Yes, go to orlandofringe.org, and you will have all the information. Like I said, lots of different dancing shows. So that's how I'm applying into our podcast.
I went, as I've told you several times, Tammy, I went to Monster Mash, the warnings online, a lot of the disclaimers were explicit content or, partial nudity or lots of profanity or something, the wilder side of Fringe. And this one, it said bad 90s dancing. as one of the disclaimers. And so, you know,
I gotta go to that one.
I thought it was gonna be campy and silly, and it was just amazing. Like, for something entitled Monster Mash, even though the story was really bizarre, there are parts of the story that were very touching, and the dancers were really, really good. Like, the dancing was really phenomenal. I was so impressed with the dancing. So you got your camp goofiness and some really good dancing at the same time. It wasn't belly dancing, but it was very good dancing.
The other stuff coming up in Orlando, some of the stuff that I had mentioned on our last podcast, hasn't changed. Festival of Nile is coming up. Festivalofthenile.com, June 5th through 7th. Dawn from Georgia will be doing all kinds of fun workshops, including Zills, Veils, and Stage Presence. So that is at the Ramada Hotel, Orlando Celebration. Also that same weekend, where I will be at Southern Oasis, alchemydance.com, in Augusta, Georgia, with Unmada.
Unmada!
And so hopefully we will have a nice surprise for all of you five listeners. So that's what I've got for you guys around town. I am on the lookout for anything else coming up, so if people have events coming up, send them to me, and I will definitely talk about them in the next episode. So the way you can get a hold of me or Mary is by sending us an email at yippodcast.com. You can go to our website at yippodcast.com. You can Skype us at yippodcast, and you can call and leave us a message at 321-441-3933. So thanks for listening to us at yippodcast.com. This has been Tammy.
And this has been Mary, and a big thanks to our guest, Jody. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Happy to be here.
Yep. Shut up.